look at the idea of wisdom, and we notice many times that wisdom is a path that we need to follow, that it is a path that's not a natural one, but it is not the end of the product. When you notice the book of Ecclesiastes, for instance, the point is made there that even knowledge and wisdom and the acquiring of those is not the purpose of life. One can do that and still not have a will to do what is the will of God. Yet you cannot be one that's right in the sight of God without seeking the path of wisdom. The path of folly is one that is going to be led by self. It's self-directed. It's after our own desires. But the path of wisdom is directed by knowledge. Knowledge doesn't automatically bring wisdom, but knowledge gives us the way to get to that wisdom of a utilization of that knowledge to do what's right, a recognition of that which is best, and as we see that, a way of putting that knowledge into work in serving God. In Proverbs, the 13th chapter, the writer there gets to the idea of some of the habits that are there of those who are wise versus the fools. And we want to look at a few of those this morning. He starts out by saying, "He who walks with wise men will be wise, but the companion of fools will be destroyed." We recognize the points that are made in the New Testament along the same line. We see the examples of those in the Old Testament where people had around them those who were given to folly or given to a way of evil, and they followed them. And that's why you have the admonition in the New Testament that we be those who recognize that we are to have an association with people of right, with those who do what is right. That if we have a companionship that is of evil, it corrupts our good morals. But when we look at wisdom, it's going to be a path that is led by those seeking wisdom, by those who are around them, learning that path. Let's look at something about the difference between wisdom and folly with regard to the idea of counsel that's given. This is stressed throughout the Proverbs, and I just want to go and notice a few of them, if I might, this morning. First, that folly rejects that counsel. If you turn to Proverbs chapter 12, and we're just going to go through these in a kind of a list fashion, reading one after the other with each side of this. In Proverbs 12 and in verse 15, "The way of a fool is right in his own eyes, but he who heeds counsel is wise." Or when you look at Proverbs chapter 1, back in verse 22, a principle is given here saying, "How long, you simple ones, will you love simplicity? For scorners delight in their scorning, and fools hate knowledge." That knowledge that is there that would bring them unto wisdom, if it's rightly applied, they're ones that don't desire that. They want to live in just what they know of themselves, just what they acquire in their own ideas. When you look at Proverbs chapter 15, you see much the same thing in verse 5. The record says, "A fool despises his father's instruction, but he who receives correction is prudent." So folly is on the side of that rejection. In Proverbs 16 and in verse 22, "Understanding is a wellspring of life to him who has it, but the correction of fools is folly." It's no use. And the reason is they refuse to listen. In Proverbs 23 and in verse 9, the wise man says, "Do not speak in the hearing of a fool, for he will despise the wisdom of your words." That point that is made, that they'll shut that off at the very outset. And in Proverbs chapter 28 and in verse 26, he points out, "He who trusts in his own heart is a fool, but whoever walks wisely will be delivered." You see the idea in each of those that folly is directed of one's own knowledge. It doesn't seek anymore. It wants to be one who gratifies self, does what it desires. If one's being pointed out in a different way, or if they're counseled with regard to the right way versus the wrong way they're doing things, or if they're rebuked in that wrong, in all of that, folly doesn't want to listen. It puts all of that to the side and refuses another's counsel to accept only what it desires. But wisdom is in a different way. Wisdom accepts that which is wise, the counsel of that wisdom. When you look at Proverbs chapter 10 and in verse 8, the statement is made by the wise man, the wise in heart will receive commands, but a prating fool will fall. That wisdom again to receive those things that are the commandments of God, the true and ultimate source of wisdom. In Proverbs 11 and in verse 14, where there is no counsel, the people fall. But in the multitude of counselors, there is safety. I want you to notice this point that is prevalent as we go through the rest of this list with regard to that counsel that is being sought of the wise. The wise man seeks that, the fool does not. In Proverbs 15 and in verse 22, it's expressed this way. Without counsel, plans go awry. But in the multitude of counselors, they are established. Sometimes people try to cover up the idea of not going to receive counsel by saying, oh, I keep confidences and all of that. Counsel is not a betrayal of confidences. Counsel is something where there's the recognition that there is a right way, a wise way to deal with something, and it's trying to go to those who are of wisdom who help us do that in the right way. Recognizing their path or that which they have seen and learned may help us in the matter. In Proverbs 17 and in verse 10, Proverbs 17 and in verse 10, rebuke is more effective for a wise man than 100 blows on a fool. There the idea of one who's beating that fool and trying to, as my father used to say, beating some sense into it, that doesn't usually work. A fool's going to be a fool. But that wise man is going to receive the rebuke and become wiser as a result of it. In Proverbs chapter 24 and in verse 6, it says this, for by wise counsel you will wage your own war, and in a multitude of counselors there is safety. Notice the similarity of that in Proverbs chapter 20 and in verse 18 where he says plans are established by counsel. By wise counsel wage war. The idea of one going out to wage war, obviously, only a fool would want to do that and put people at risk to have the problems that could come about by a loss of that war. He's first going to take a kind of an understanding of, is this going to be that which is good? You notice in the New Testament, Jesus talks about the idea of the one who sees another coming with twice as many soldiers against him. He's going to sit down and plan beforehand. He's going to think about that and take a kind of an estimate. Am I able to withstand this one coming with more with what I have? And if he doesn't, he's going to seek for peace. Go for ways in which there might be a recognition of some treaty that would be involved. In all of these things, the idea of waging war is not just the waging of war, of physical warfare. The point is that when there is a battle, when there is something that is costly at stake, there needs to be a recognition that we do that which is of right, that which is wise, that which costs the least of the problems and gives the most benefit for good that can come about from that. Well, that difference of the difference between the wise man and the fool then gets to that concept of whether I'm going to receive that counselor or not, whether I'm going to listen to the rebuke that I might receive. But when you look at the nature of folly and the nature of wisdom, it's not just in seeking counsel. The fact is that wisdom is always on the side of that which is good and right, that which is moral and true. But evil is over and again seen to be that which is there with folly. Notice the Proverbs again. In Proverbs chapter 10 and in verse 23, the statement is this, to do evil is like sport to a fool, but a man of understanding has wisdom. You know, some people, they enjoy that way of evil, and they're going to go in that regardless of whether it brings them a problem or not. It's become something that is addictive to them, almost like going out and being in some competition and trying to get more and more evil along the way. That's what the wise man is noting here. In Proverbs chapter 13 and in verse 19, The statement is made this way. It says, a desire accomplished is sweet to the soul, but it is an abomination to fools to depart from evil. That point of two contrasting there, you look at that idea, a desire that is accomplished is sweet to the soul. When we're trying to get to be those who do more and more what is right, an accomplishment of going along that way is something that we recognize of good. Have you ever tried to learn something, get more understanding of God's Word in a particular matter, and you say, I just don't understand that passage? You think on it. You read other things that help you with regard to that, of different passages that may come in there. And then what do? You finally get that light pops on, and you, oh, I get it now. That's the point. That's sweet to the one who is a wise man. That gaining of that knowledge and that wisdom that comes from that. But what's a fool going to be like? The fool's going to see it as an abomination to depart from evil. Why would anybody do that? That's something that they can't understand, of going away from evil. Why? Because it's captivated them. It's come to be a path that they're so involved in because of a saturation of self-desire that they're not going to go out and gain any knowledge from that. Sin, really, ultimately, is that which is folly. The Bible over and over again points that out. You can't be involved in a sin that makes you wiser unless you recognize from that the folly of what you've just done and you turn to go the other way. Anything that is an exercise of good is going to bring one toward wisdom. But sin comes from folly. Notice in Proverbs 10 and in verse 18 the statement, whoever hides hatred has lying lips, and whoever spreads slander is a fool. When you had the parallelism in the Hebrew language, it's often coming through in the Psalms and the Proverbs. It puts two things side by side and gives a likeness between them. When you have the lying lips, what's the purpose of the lying lips? Oftentimes, it's out there to hide hatred. In other words, you tell someone with flattery how wonderful they are, and the result of that is what? You hide your own disgust and your own contempt for them. Then he goes along and says, and whoever spreads slander, the other side of that, besides the flattery that you lie about someone with, the slander that's there is what? It's of a fool. And so the same point is made either way. A fool is that which is seen by the sins that are there of the tongue. But in Proverbs 14 and in verse 8, it points out the deceit that's behind that lie is also there, that intent. In Proverbs 14 and in verse 8, it says, the wisdom of the prudent is to understand his way, but the folly of fools is deceit. When we come and we face ourselves as we ought, there's wisdom that's found there. You remember in James chapter 1, the point is made, the one that looks into the perfect law of liberty, he sees himself. What does he do if he's wise? He corrects that. But the point is that if he's a hearer only, and he goes away and forgets what manner of man he was, that man's a fool. And that man's ultimately one that's going to be lost, and that's the point here. Wisdom is going to give us to be ones who would understand our own way, see the problems that are there, make corrections that are pointed out, and grow in that path of wisdom. That's not the path of folly. Folly is going to be satisfied with the things of self, and if they're brought to objectively look at themselves, then what happens? They'll try to deceive themselves because they want to continue in the way of evil. In Proverbs 20, and in verse 3, the idea of strife and what's involved in that is undertaken by the wise man here. In Proverbs 20 and in verse 3, it is honorable for a man to stop striving, since a fool can start a quarrel. When there is that constant strife that is there, and one desires that kind of a way of strife, that's a point of folly. It's a wise person who's able to put that to rest and stop that. That doesn't suggest that we ought to agree with everything even when it's evil. That's not the point. Point is, we direct it toward a way of correction, and when that's brought, there is a ceasing. We don't have a desire to continue on in that problem. But one who's a fool has that desire to always stir up strife. You ever seen anybody like that? That they'd like to get a good argument started with people, and so they'll gig one or they'll gig the other, and you'll get this going for long. Why? Because that's going to be entertaining to them, to see that kind of a strife. That's a fool. There's nothing that comes about good of that kind of thing. There is that which is good when we can recognize what's right and we can unite together in that path of right and then continue on in the way of God. Look in Proverbs chapter 14 to kind of put a close to this point. In Proverbs 14 and in verse 16, it says, "A wise man fears and departs from evil, but a fool rages and is self-confident." The idea there of one leaving evil, coming to a way of right, practicing that which is godly and moral. That's going to be the path that is there of a wise man. He'll depart from those things of evil toward doing what is right. But a fool is going to do what? He's going to rage and be self-confident in that very evil. In other words, he's going to increase in that. Paul told Timothy that very thing. That evil man and seducer shall wax worse and worse, deceiving and being deceived. That's the path of folly. And it's self-destructive and it multiplies as it goes. So you can see that problem with evil. The habits that are there of that which is a folly is that it tends towards that of sin. But there's another habit of folly, and that is that shame tends with it. It's not going to be seen with wisdom. Wisdom does not bring us to shame. It sometimes brings us to recognize our own wrong and to correct that. That's not shameful. That's right. That's honorable. Everyone is involved in things that are wrong at some point in time in their lives. It is honorable to see that and change from that path. But there is going to be a path that is of shame that's there with the one who is in folly that just goes together. In Proverbs 3 and in verse 35, that point is made. Here Solomon says, "The wise shall inherit glory, but shame shall be the legacy of fools." You know, the idea of shame is the recognition of that which is wrong about our life. It is the recognition of that which is there present within us. That brings us to a point of being those that are ashamed of ourselves. Or we recognize the wrong that is to be done. We recognize the humiliation that's involved. Well, the proverb writer here points out that that wise man, while he's going toward the inheritance of glory, that fool is going to be one who his legacy left behind him is of his own folly. I think everybody's known somebody who you go to their funeral and you're going to say, well, what in the world good can they have to say about this guy? Maybe we knew some of the family and we wanted to be of some encouragement there. And you go to the funeral and there's just not a lot you can say about a fool. I went to one funeral one time and I remember that not only did the fellow who was doing the funeral, but several of the family got up and shared stories that showed the absolute folly of this guy. I thought, my, what to leave of a legacy that's there behind but to sit there and have a laugh over folly that takes place. If I want to be laughed at and be seen in shame, folly is a great way to get there. That's going to be the path. But if there wants to be a legacy of some honor that's involved, that comes with the path of wisdom. In Proverbs chapter 14 and in verse 24, notice the statement that is made here. The crown of the wise is their riches, but the foolishness of fools is folly. In other words, it's self-apparent. It's going to be there that it'll hang with them like a crown to a wise man that here's the king, here's the one who is going to rule. There's going to be something obvious to crown that man of folly. And it is the foolish things that he does. In Proverbs 26 and in verse 1, notice the comparison that's made here. There'll be several of my summer-loving friends that will love this one. It says, "As snow in summer and rain in harvest, so honor is not fitting for a fool." I'd love to have snow in the summer, as a matter of fact, with all the heat that goes on here sometimes. But we recognize these are out of place. That's the point. That you have snow in summer, that's not what belongs there. And when you look at the idea of a harvest, if you had a bunch of rain to where you couldn't harvest a crop, that wouldn't be any good. Those two don't go together. And he says the same thing is there when you don't have honor with a fool. That is not going to go together. Because honor is going to be with wisdom. Folly is not going to have honor. It's going to have shame. It's going to have ridicule that is involved with that. You look at the speech that's there of a fool, and it's something that's going to lead to that shame. In other words, they're going to be the ones that open themselves up to that and manifest their own folly. In the 18th chapter of the book of Proverbs, and in verse 2, the writer says, a fool has no delight in understanding but in expressing his own heart. I had an older preacher one time who said to me, he says, I have no problem in people giving their 2 cents worth. He says, it's just that I think some people overvalue what they have to give. That 2 cents worth is not what it was. It was worth nothing. And when a fool is there, he might think that he has something to offer, but what he has to offer is merely a proof of their own folly, of their own lack of understanding and wisdom. Over in the Proverbs in chapter 15 and in verse 2, the statement is made about the mouth of a fool. It says, the tongue of the wise uses knowledge aright, but the mouth of fools pour forth foolishness. That mouth of the fools pours forth that foolishness. It's going to be something that spews in an obvious way. That statement that's oftentimes attributed to Abraham Lincoln and quite a few others, as far as I've seen it, is that it's better to keep your mouth shut and be thought a fool than to open your mouth and remove all doubt. That's the truth. Whoever said it, it's a fact. And this passage is the very point that's there. That mouth that is a folly, rather than thinking about what it's going to say, is just going to pour forth with whatever is there on the brain. It just pours forth. And it exposes its own lack of understanding. In Proverbs 12 and in verse 23, Proverbs chapter 12 and in verse 23, it says, a prudent man conceals knowledge, but the heart of fools proclaims foolishness. It's something that heralds that. The word that's used by the Hebrew writer here points out the fact that it proclaims that someone who gets up and heralds for the king. Someone that shouts to be understood. Well, who's the one shouting to be understood? The heart of a fool. It's going to be that which proclaims itself, heralds itself, and shows indeed the degree of folly that's there. In Proverbs 13 and in verse 16, the point is made in a conclusion to that, that what? It says, every prudent man acts with knowledge, but a fool lays open his folly. It cannot be hidden. It's going to be obvious in its nature. If we're going to desire to be wise and to have that wisdom that is seen in a way of righteousness especially, it's going to have to be that we keep that mouth shut and that we use our mind to learn that what's there and think about that and understand before we open the mouth to engage the speech that comes from the heart. Jesus pointed out in the book of Matthew several times the fact that from the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. If there's an abundance of folly within the heart, the mouth will show that. But if there's an abundance of wisdom that's there, the mouth also will show that by the product that it gives. Let's look at one more thing. And that is, how is it that you have the dealing with a fool? If we want to be wise, we aren't the companions of fools. We don't do like the fools do and the various things that are pointed out of evil or the various things that are there of spewing that forth in our heart. How do we deal with those who are fools then? Well, in Proverbs chapter 26 and in verse 4, the record just simply says, do not answer a fool according to his folly, lest you also be like him. In other words, when a fool's out here speaking, And they're spewing forth this idea of folly. We many times think, well, I'm going to answer that every time. But he says there's some times that we need to recognize that someone who's in his folly, if we get involved in a discussion with them, we're going to be dragged down into that pit that they're in. That lack of wisdom, that folly that's pointed out. Now, that's one thing. But notice the very next verse. The very next verse in Proverbs 26 and in verse 5 says, answer a fool according to his folly, lest he be wise in his own conceit. Now, wait a minute. How can it be in verse 4 that I am to avoid that of answering the fool according to their folly? And in verse 5, I'm to expose that folly lest they have conceit in their own eyes like nobody can answer me. Well, the point of that is what? It is that wisdom has to be used to distinguish which one is which. You know, the fact is, I have to admit, looking back on my life, there are a lot of times that I've violated that one that's in verse 5. That idea of exposing a fool according to their folly. Many times I have failed to do that. And recognize that when I left, you know, maybe there was somebody that thought that was right and I should have said something about that. But that's not the majority problem that I've had, I don't think. I think the violation that I most often committed was number 4, or verse 4. And that is when there's someone who's going to be spewing out that folly, sometimes our getting involved in that very point merely expresses that. Have you ever noticed that there are things sometimes that people say of foolishness and of evil that are self-evident in how wrong they are? There was a fellow who came in when I was preaching first time in a congregation called Antioch in Theodosia, Florida. He came into the audience, and it was obvious that he was drunk. I mean, obvious. The people who were back there in the back, I was teaching in front, and the people who were back there in the back, they could smell it. And they said, it smelled like we walked into a Jack Daniels factory. And I didn't notice the smell. I wasn't that close. But I noticed before very long he had that hand that went up and it kind of waved around like that, and then he had something to say. You ever notice the fact that a drunk can't figure out that they're speaking strangely? But everybody else around him can. That tongue gets thick, and it gets obvious. The mood is different. The way in which they express themselves is different. They think they're wise, they think they're hiding it, but they're just opening up very clearly that they've been involved in drinking. At that point, I launched into about 15 minutes of a lesson after I figured out the problem that was there of drinking. About halfway through it, he went asleep. Somebody poked him. He waked up. He came out and he said, that's the best thing I ever heard. Went on his way. Well, that was 15 minutes of wasted speech. Probably was. There were a few other things I could have been involved in. Have you ever been there? We need to recognize and note those points when something needs to be answered and when it's self-evident of the problem. And when it's self-evident, what we do is get involved in that. We're simply bringing ourselves down to that level of foolishness. Now, that's not to negate the point that is in verse 5 either. Sometimes those who need to be exposed in the things of evil, especially false teaching that's pointed out. I don't know of any time in the Scripture that false teaching was not exposed in one way or another. Sometimes it was exposed in private as they took one aside, like they did with Apollos, and taught him the way of God more perfectly. And other cases of outright error that in and of itself was never true and never would be true. There was a standing before them like Paul did before Peter, and he was one who rejected him and confronted him to the face before them all. That needs to be done. But we need to see the difference between which is which. There is a tendency on the one part to come down into that folly with one, which we ought to avoid. And in the other, there is that lack of an ability to have that confronting of error when it needs to be confronted. of instead pacifying ourselves with saying, well, I don't want to get involved in arguing. I don't want to get involved in that of debate. A young preacher one time told me several years ago, he said, well, I've noticed some of your writing, the debates that are there, some of the times that you've been involved in controversy. He says, I really appreciate that. He said, people that are like that, he says, I don't feel comfortable. Now, I don't like to have any problems with people. That's just not my thing. Well, you know what? I don't like to have any problems with people either. I don't know of too many people that have confronted and exposed error that have liked to do that. It has a cost associated with it. And there is a problem that comes about to one who does that. But there is a need to do what the Bible says and expose that when it's necessary. How am I going to know which is the point? The first one that's in verse 4 or the second one that's in verse 5? The idea is wisdom. Recognize and evaluate the thing that's under discussion. And then we recognize whether it is something that is self-evident that we need to leave alone and let it expose itself. Or whether it is something that one who's spewing that of wrong or evil or false doctrine is going to corrupt the minds of others unless we stand in and do what's right. Ephesians points that out very clearly. That we're not to be those who are passive with the things of error, but rather we are to expose them. So the point of wisdom is one that's not only going to be seen in the various things in our lives, it's going to be seen in how we deal with others as well, and how we confront that evil that is present and that folly that is present with them. The lesson's yours. We're going to go to God in a word of prayer at this point, and then we'll go to our classes. And they'll start at 10 o'clock.